Members, we do have a quorum. I'd like to call the Higher Education Policy and Finance Committee to order. And the first order of business will be the minutes. Who wants to be representative? Benson. Representative Benson moves minutes from March the 11th. Any comments, questions? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Minutes are approved.
Thank you for doing that.
Is that too fast?
No.
Oh. We have two bills on the agenda today, beginning with House File 862, Representative Benson. You have two witnesses?
I do, sir.
You could invite them down if you'd like. Representative Benson, you can move your bill.
Mr. Chairman and committee members, I'd like to move House File 862 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
All right, and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm here today. It's a very simple bill. It's a bill that helps to restore the funding to 2010 levels for the partnership between the University of Minnesota and the Mayo Clinic. It has an outstanding track record of it'd be easy for me to point to the fact that it has led to a huge amount of economic improvements to the state and to the community. However, I'd be amiss if I didn't also point to the fact that the real benefit to our state and to the United States and the world, in fact, is the research that's being done that ultimately will help in medical research to make multiple advancements in many diseases. The two witnesses that are here today are going to be much more qualified to speak to the research that's being done presently. But just as a reminder, this partnership was started in 2003, and April 2005, Governor Pawlenty signed a bonding bill for $21.5 million to add a number of floors and research space to the Stabil building, which is on the Mayo campus, and that has led to this great relationship that they have. And I think I'll just quit there and allow for the two witnesses that are here. By the way, I did forget to introduce myself. My name is Mike Benson. For the record, Mr. Chairman, I'm the representative for District 30B in Olmsted and Wabasha counties. I'll let these gentlemen introduce themselves for the record.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, I'm Dr. Eric Wieben from the Mayo Clinic. I'm the Mayo Project Leader for the Minnesota Partnership for Biotechnology and Medical Genomics.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, members, committee members, I'm Tucker Labian, Associate Vice President for Research in the Academic Health Center and Eric's counterpart in the management of the University Mayo Project.
Go ahead.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Dr. Paller from the university and I were here recently, and I hope at that time we gave you some good overview of some of the past history and recent progress from the partnership. So today, Dr. Labian and I are planning to just update some of the facts and figures and be happy to answer any questions you might have. So let me turn it over to Tucker for some introductory remarks.
Yes, certainly. I think one of the things that's there are several things that are really important in this initiative over the years. The first one, of course, is the historical, now historical, intent of this project to capture the brightest minds and the most innovative ideas from both the Mayo Clinic and the University of Minnesota to tackle what are really the outstanding problems in biomedical research in our time, and that's diabetes, cancer, cardiovascular disease, brain injury, infectious disease, etc. And I think from the start, the intent has been to to take advantage and encourage individuals from both institutions to combine their expertise in a way that neither institution could do by itself. So one of the consequences of this initiative thus far is that we have made, I believe, 45 awards, total awards, over the period of 7 years or so. And one of the ways that we measure success is not only the impact, the economic impact that it has on Mayo and the university with respect to the involvement of individuals who work on these projects, but also, of course, our ability to use these experiences to garner support from the National Institutes of Health, which we estimate has been about 57 different NIH grants involving 36 different faculty members, which is, in our world, a stunning success and testimony to what we've intended this would be all along. So just very specifically, I would share with you a vignette about how we use the money, how we invest it, and what a difference of $1 million or $800,000 would actually mean. So we have a very competitive grant process where partners from each institution submit an application, and Dr. Wieben and I orchestrate a peer review process of these applications. So the last time around, which was I think just a few months ago, we had 22 applications, and we had enough money in the partnership to support five of them. And they were in some of the major areas I've just mentioned to you, in cancer, diabetes, nanotechnology, etc. Now, the point I want to make is that if you ask the question, were the 17 applications that we couldn't fund, were they just lousy grants? Were they lousy ideas, or did we have concerns about them? The answer is no. And in fact, I look at the sweet spot in this process is that if we had enough money, we'd pay about a third of them, which is about the way that the NIH does their business as well. So by increasing the current budget of the partnership by $1 million or so dollars, this would allow us to fund another highly innovative, we would expect high impact study that we think is in the best interest of not only the citizens of Minnesota, but others who share common goals around the country and the world.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'd also like to point out that in addition to these collaborative research grants, as Dr. Levine was just telling us, that we've also used partnership funding to fund 14 infrastructure grants. And these are, again, competitive awards that are made on a highly competitive basis and reviewed by high-level panels from both institutions, to add to our equipment and other background knowledge that's then available to all the investigators and all the people who work at and do their studies both at Mayo and at the University of Minnesota. And I'll give you one example just to illustrate the type of impact that these type of investments can also make in our economy. And that is, one of those grants from a couple of years ago was used to purchase some new high-throughput DNA sequencing instruments that went to both institutions. And just one of those instruments that has been used at Mayo by both investigators from the university and from the Mayo Clinic last year led to two separate $12 million NIH grants. And again, those large influx of dollars from our infrastructure investments are supporting and sustaining additional jobs in both of these communities and supporting additional discoveries that will help to put Minnesota on the map. And I think the other thing that I'd like to just update you on, one of the things that I mentioned briefly the last time we were here, was that we have attracted some international interest from partnership activities. And last Friday, I got an email from our collaborator in the Czech Republic who informed me that the joint grant application involving partnership investigators from Minnesota and the group from the Czech Republic is just awaiting a signature from the EU officials in Brussels to get funded. And I'm not sure exactly at what level that'll be funded, but it's likely to be multi-million dollars. And the idea is that will be bringing euros to support research, economic development things here within Minnesota. So I hope to see that finalized within the next 6 weeks or so. And again, it illustrates that the investment that the legislature has made in partnership activities is having not only local impact, but it's beginning to be recognized very nicely around the world, and that has the potential to add to our ability to both improve health care and to support economic development here in Minnesota.
Thank you. Any other comments, Representative Benson?
No, we welcome some questions,
we have a
Mr.
question
Chairman.
Or two, I guess, Representative Rukabina.
Question or two, Mr. Chair, yes. First of all, could maybe Mr. Berg remind me that the governor's proposed cuts at about 6% or whatever it is amount to 140 some million for the system? And the targets then for this committee are, what's the cut for this committee, the target?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Rukavina, the governor cut in total from the University of Minnesota, you mean?
Give me both of them, because I mean they can cut the university and or Minsky more and give it to
Mr. Chairman, Representative Rukavina. The governor cut $171 million from the 12-13 base for the higher ed committee. The target for this committee on the same basis from 12-13 is a negative 411.
Okay, thank you. So I guess
Representative Rukavina.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Benson, you know, this is a good program. In fact, I think unlike what former Governor Pawlenty had proposed when I was chairing this, I, on the insistence of Representative Norton, put the $8 million in the base or seven something, whatever it was. But you know, in our last cut bill, in the last end of the last year, we cut all of the state specials an equal amount, and this was one of them that got cut. And then in the first bill that went out of here, if I'm not mistaken, Representative Benson, you voted to make those cuts permanent in the base. Or am I mistaken? Did you do that in that bill?
Representative Benson.
Okay, so now you want to restore them, and that's fine, but you have a huge cut, a target to cut here compared to the governor, and I just want to know, can you give us an idea what you think should be cut by, you know, whatever, what the total dollar amount is, and I don't know what it comes to get to the $8 million. What should be cut to fill that in?
I have those numbers, and this would be a 14.6% increase from the 2010 level. That's what I'm asking for in the bill. And there's no doubt that next...
Mr. Chair, and the dollar amount is?
$8
million. Okay. And so what are you cutting $8 million to?
You know, I have no doubt, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Rukavina, that Representative Rukavina, that that we're going to have some difficult times in the next couple of weeks in deciding values and priorities, and I'm with this bill making sure that that this is raised to the top of that discussion because of the value that it brings both to the state and in jobs and to the future of healthcare. So in terms of knowing exactly what I would cut, I'm just making sure that this is a high priority in the discussions that we make next week.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Rukavina.
Representative Benson, is your intention to take this then out of the portion that gets appropriated to the University of Minnesota, or would you could take it out of whatever the cut is, the Minsky, or wherever it comes from out of the total budget of this committee?
Representative Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Representative Rukavina. We're going to have some difficult choices, and we'll all be part of that discussion. And in terms of where exactly the $8 million will come from or the addition, because there's 6.9 from last year, almost $7 million from last year. the 12 and 13 right now is 6.9. The governor's recommendation is 6.5. So this increase will have to come from somewhere. I don't have any doubts about that. Where that will exactly come from will be determined by this committee as we proceed through the discussions next week.
Well,
Representative Rukavina.
Mr. Chair and members, and maybe from the two gentlemen from the Mayo University Partnership, if I'm not mistaken, isn't there also a collaboration between the Mayo and the University and the Hormel Institute and Representative Poppy's district? Aren't you doing work down there and get grants, federal grants, too?
Mr. Levine?
Yes, the Hormel Institute, which collaborates with both the Mayo Clinic and the University, are absolutely correct, has a reporting line, as it turns out, into the University of Minnesota because it's actually part of the university. And although they are eligible for partnership funds, I think I'd have to defer the question to Dr. Wieben as to whether they've been funded or not.
Yes.
Through this mechanism.
Yes, there has been one grant funded that has involved Hormel.
So, Mr. Chair, Representative Benson, being that they're doing good work and getting grants from the federal government and that too, can we jack this up a little bit and we'll give some money to Representative Poppy's district too, since we're spending extra money all of a sudden when we got to cut $400 million? Because I've been at the Hormel Institute down there and seen what they're doing, and it's pretty impressive also. So would you be inclined to support that if we, maybe not today, but at least when we're putting the bill together, offer an amendment to give the Hormel a base appropriation too for the university?
Representative Benson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Rukavina, I think there are probably a lot of things on the table and a lot of amendments offered. I certainly would enter into discussions about how we would go about that, but right now the bill is to help with this partnership that has provided a lot of opportunity. In fact, it wasn't discussed. It was in the previous testimony by in terms of their presentation a week ago. This resulted in 2,700 jobs. So it is a absolutely worthwhile project to make sure that we continue with it.
Well, Mr. Chair,
Representative Rukavina,
and I know this, the university Twin Cities campus mostly gets, I think, between $600 and $700 million this year. I see Ms. Peterson's in the audience, and she can nod her head, but I think it's in the $650 million range in grants. $800 million. Oh, geez, I didn't mean to insult anybody. And those are just as important in creating jobs and everything else. They're going to get cut if that $411 million is given the small cuts in the Office of Higher Education and the grants that go out of there. Let's just say that it's a $200 million cut to the university. That's certainly going to affect all of the research that their people do at Minneapolis or at Hormel. And so they're going to be all affected. This is, I appreciate you being a new member taking care of your district, and I certainly haven't been shy about doing that myself, I might add. But, you just voted to cut this program in the base a few weeks ago, and now you're looking to take money from somebody else to restore what you just voted to cut. And I would hope that as we move along, Representative Benson, you realize that, first of all, for my Republican friends, that obviously government can help create jobs. Because you just said government helped create 2,300 jobs. And so government can help create jobs, and I'm glad that I'm hearing that. Pat, are you okay with this line of questioning? Being in the courtroom. But, other places have just as outstanding a record in creating jobs. And I hope we all think about the consequences of the, what amounts to massive cuts in higher education, and not only how it affects the students and their education and their tuition and their expenses, but how it affects all the research that gets done at certainly our premier medical institution and higher education institution in this state. So with that, I guess I'll just shut up and Thank you, Mr. Chair.
No, my pleasure. We enjoy listening to you.
Representative Saving Poppy. It for you, for your back.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, actually, Representative Rukavina raised the issue. And just follow up on the Hormel Institute, certainly. I would concur with Representative Rukavina's concerns that as we're going into the future here and making cuts to the University of Minnesota, to the Hormel Institute, who does have a relationship with the University of Minnesota, that we are impacting students, certainly, but we are also equally impacting the research that gets done. And that's a great concern, and certainly the Hormel Institute has been able to elevate the amount of grants that the university receives. So I'm just wanting to be able to follow up with Representative Rukavina that it's important for us to keep these things in mind, because it does help us to hopefully cure cancer, as the Hormel Institute is, you know, very involved in the cancer research. Maybe it's going to, you know, look at curing diabetes or heart disease or other kinds of things. But as we're looking forward and trying to come up with how do we invest dollars here, you, Representative Benson, you will be looking at where you're going to be cutting, and it's going to be important for all of us to be aware that many good things happen at the University of Minnesota. And so it's not just, certainly it's at the Hormel Institute as much as it is through Mayo and through the University of Minnesota's research in Crookston and other locations as well. So I don't really have any question, I guess, but just a comment that, I certainly value the work that gets done, but when the cuts come, and as they have already been coming, we're going to drastically curtail some of the great research and opportunities that we've already been pursuing.
Representative Morrow.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Benson, I agree with everything you said in the presentation about the importance of investment in research, about the economic and job impact, about the importance of this partnership to the state. And for that reason, Mr. Chair, I'd like to move an amendment to the bill. I had a chance, today is National Agriculture Day, members. And I had some folks, Mr. Chair, I think from your area as well as from my area, come and talk to me about the importance of the agricultural specials to research, to partnerships, to the state's economy. I also had members of the Minnesota Farm Bureau come to me today. And I'm sorry, Representative Benson, I'm trying to get the page's attention to give you a copy of the amendment as well. So, Mr. Chair, without moving further, I would move the amendment that I'm distributing now.
Representative Benson,
yeah,
you have a comment?
Mr. Chairman, I haven't seen the amendment yet, but I too had the agriculture folks and the wheat farmers specifically in my office today. I am very aware of the need to take a look at their appropriation as well. I don't believe that this fits in any shape or form with the bill that you see before you today, and I would not vote for inclusion of this amendment to the bill.
Well, if I might, Mr. Chair, I will ask for a roll call on this. Mr. Chair, I think it fits in perfectly. It's about the University of Minnesota. It's about the importance of biotech, biomedical, and it's also about the importance of agriculture. Mr. Chair, I think that is doing the very same things that Representative Benson is trying to do. I'm trying to help an important sector of our economy. I hope that members could support this amendment.
Members, it's my opinion that this might be a better place for this would be when we're voting on our final bill, and we could take and consider amendments at that time. It'd be more appropriate. But if you want to have a roll call today, we'll certainly oblige. Any other comments? Ready for roll?
Representative Nornes?
No.
Representative Detmer. Representative Rukavina.
Mr. Chair, do I have Representative Atkins proxy today? Yes.
Representative Atkins.
Yep.
Absent. Representative Banyan.
No.
Representative Benson?
No.
Representative Doubt?
No.
Representative Depke?
No.
Representative Hancock?
Nay.
Representative Mazerall?
No.
Representative Morrow?
Aye.
Representative Norton?
Yes.
Representative Pawlowski?
Yes.
Representative Poppy?
Aye.
Representative Vogel?
No.
Okay, there are 9 nays and 5 ayes. So the amendment fails. And I should also add that they were in my office today, too. And in fact, there are 2 of them were from my home area. So we're, I think, all pretty much on the same page. We'd like to help them as much as we can, and we'll deal with it at the appropriate time. So, Representative Benson, anything further?
I'd like to just summarize, if I could, Mr. Chairman. I want to thank the committee. I know that this is a bill with bipartisanship in terms of authors. My fellow DFL legislators from the home area. This is hopefully going to be one of those that will rise to the top during our discussions and our debate in terms of a real value to the state of Minnesota. Certainly it is to the community of Rochester and the surrounding area. I believe that it does bring lots of value to the table, and look forward to those discussions and the inclusion of this bill. Thank you.
Okay. So House File 862 will be laid over for possible inclusion.
Well, welcome, Mr. Chair.
Nice
would
to
you,
be here.
House File 849, would you like to move your bill?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'd like to move House File 849 to be laid over for possible inclusion in the higher education omnibus bill.
Okay, would you present your bill?
I have no witnesses.
Okay.
House File 849 attempts to remove some of the mandates on higher education, particularly at a time when the institutions are facing reductions in state funding, as we're all aware. So it's a good time to examine some of the things that we've been mandating, ideas. We've been looking around this legislative session for relief for mandates, and I think these are a couple of ideas that I have found by looking through the statutes that I find probably are unnecessary at this time. If colleges and universities, or anyone else for that matter, has a compelling reason for it, I guess we'd be glad to hear about it today. I'll go through the bill. It's not very long, just 2 sections. The first section removes a prohibition on entering into agreements to market credit cards at post-secondary institutions. Students have the right to make financial decisions on their own, and are already inundated with credit card offers regardless of whether this prohibition stays or not. So to deny the institutions the possibility of some income from those agreements, I guess, would only be harmful to those schools, in my opinion. So that's Section 1. Section 2 repeals 3 specific areas. The first requires that all public and private schools are to give notice to students that arrests, charges, and convictions of criminal offenses may limit employment and financial aid possibilities. Schools can certainly continue this practice if they want to, but it isn't really what I consider necessary. The next mandate reduction would be mandate that, to the extent possible, college bookstores on college bookstores on public colleges or university campuses must sell clothing manufactured in the United States. Each college and university certainly can do that if they choose. The mandate also evidently required a report to the legislature, and I'm not sure that if that's ever been done. So that would be something else that they would not have to continue to do, but I don't think they've been doing it in the first place. So So well-intentioned, but probably just, another burdensome mandate. And the last one deals with public employers purchasing of equipment and apparel, and again, mandating that it must be manufactured in the United States. This affects all public employers, specifically naming the university and also MNSCU. It's also well-intentioned, but the cost to public employers is quite substantial, and I've heard from my city, the city manager in my community, that in a lot of cases it nearly doubles the cost of some of the items that they purchase. So we all like free trade, and we all like to buy American if we can, but again, this is something that probably, in my opinion, an area that we don't have to go. Those are the items in this bill, and I guess at this point, fire away.
Are there any questions from the committee? Representative Norton is first.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just say I actually have had I've taken a call from a young lady who enrolled in college and was told that perhaps the major that she was seeking might, her ability to do that job once she went through her education would be perhaps affected by a DUI that she had. And she called to talk to me about that. And in fact, it could. And it may. But it gave her the opportunity to think about something that might affect her very future before she spent a lot of money doing it. And so I guess if it isn't costly to the university and is simply about sharing a bit of information and it helps a student for making a choice, I've heard of something similar. I haven't talked to them myself in the area of criminal justice with a young man that had something in his background that probably would keep him from getting the job. He could get the education in the area, but then once he was done, he wouldn't have the job. So I guess I'm questioning something that doesn't have a cost to the university that might be beneficial to our students, whether that really is worth relieving the mandate for. So I just, because I've had that personal experience, I think it was helpful to the student to be able to think about it, and they would not have thought about it at their young age, the impact of a mistake on employment. Their minds are so set on getting the degree. So I just lay that out there for you to think about. I'll probably vote against it if I had the opportunity, if that provision stays in there, just because of the experience I've had, but I wanted to share that with you.
Representative Rukavina.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, are you going to ask if there's anybody in the audience that might want to comment on this? Because
yes, we will, Rukavina.
And particularly following up on what Representative Norton just said, I just had a constituent, actually a former young gentleman who I used to coach in baseball years ago, who got a degree and had something on his record, and he just got in. Notified from the Department of Human Services that he couldn't work in his field that he graduated from in college, and we were actually able to try to fix it up, and actually through a lot of meetings and everything else were able to help this young kid, who's a really good kid, that made a mistake like almost every kid does in their life, particularly with the police state that we're living under now and all the laws that we have and the crimes that we've made and the lawyers that we've helped. No offense, Representative Adams. But anyway, and if Atkins were here, I'd tell him the same thing. But, I can't understand your problem with this, Mr. Chair, that you wouldn't want a student that's going to spend $20,000 or $30,000 or $40,000 to know that maybe they shouldn't go into that line of work or get a degree in that area if they've got something on their past record, which we've made almost everything. I mean, I'm surprised that jaywalking isn't a felony now, but we've made everything a crime, and they're being affected. I get calls from people all the time. And all that tried to do a few years back, I think it was Senator Latz that had, kind of stumbled upon the problems that we have trying to clear people who have gotten a license in something, a lot of times young kids making mistakes, get a degree, go into that, get it, whether it's nursing or social work or whatever, and all of a sudden they're told that they can't work in the field that they got a degree from. So for the life of me, I can't understand how you think that a little, you know, line in state statute that asks these different colleges, both public and private, to check in and notify these students and save them a lot of headaches down the road, why you would want to take that out of law. So, Mr. Chair, Representative Nornes, how many mandates are currently on the books for higher education? Are these the only three mandates there are?
I don't have a number for you, Representative Rokovina.
Ms. Novak, would you know how many mandates are in state statute regarding higher education, be it the Office of Higher Education, the university, privates for profit, privates not for profit, Minskew, how many mandates do we have?
Ms. Novak?
Mr. Chair and members, I don't know the number. I know there are more requirements than...
And so, you know, Mr. Chair and Representative Nornes, I mean, you know, if you want to jazz me a little bit, that's fine, because two of these things in here are mine that I passed recently, and that's because I believe in this country, and I was raised, you know, by a mother and father who... you know, my dad wouldn't let my mom have a Sears catalog because they were non-union, much less they were still making things in the USA. You want to jazz me and screw with me, I don't really care. But to do what you're doing in the first part of this repealer, to monkey with these kids' lives, we probably have 1,000 mandates, 500. Could you please, Ms. Novak, get that for us when the full bill is being put together? And so, good, take them all out. Or don't take any of them out. Or except my two. That's okay. You can screw with me because I think I got a governor that probably would agree with this. And he veto your whole bill over a couple of mundane little parts of statute. But what's your... Explain to us here on the record. What's your rationale for going after these three when there might be 3,000 or 300? And you don't know the answer to that.
Representative Rukavina.
Chair Nornes,
the intention is not, as you use the word, jack around.
No, jazz.
Or jazz?
Yeah, it's a range term.
Oh, okay. Jazz.
Don't jack.
Whatever. Jerk around. Whatever. Okay. Anyway, that was not the intention. This particular mandate that we have such a lengthy discussion about just seems very unnecessary. If you've got a student that you use the DUI, wouldn't the parents know that? Wouldn't they be also in a position to advise the child, you know, you may have a problem down the road, the college can still do it, there's no problem with the counselor still doing it. It's just the whole idea of having to mandate it, and I agree with you, there's probably a lot of mandates that we could probably do away with. That would be my wish if we had time, and maybe at some point we will do that at a later time, but we mandate the most trivial little things sometimes, and to me that's what this represents. I fully expect students, again, in college should be mature. They ought to make some decisions. They ought to be able to think for themselves, and the parents and the people around them. I mean, I don't see where this is a major, major issue.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Representative Poppy.
Mr. Chair, I'm still on the same issue, please.
Representative Rukavina.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Representative Masrell, help me out here. Mr. Chair, let me tell you how reality works, okay? My daughter is 20 years, 11 months, and 21 days years old. I'll confess to the world, poor Ida, I'm sorry, Ida. She's walking down the street in Virginia at 2 in the morning, and on August 20th, probably 3rd or so it must have been, or 20th, and she gets stopped on a nice summer day. She's not in possession of alcohol. And she's not driving a car, but the two kids she's with, who are of age, are obviously a little, as we call it, say on the range, bunned up, you know, a little under the weather, so to speak. So the cop cards all three of them. My daughter's 10 days away from being 21 years old, not in possession, not driving a car, But this cop, being a good police state we're in now, decides to give her an underage drinking. She's going to school. I can't know that. She's 18 years old. I didn't even know it till years later. These parents don't know, but they're paying the bill for an 18-year-old or a 19-year-old or a 20-year-old that's screwed up. And in this case, to me, it wasn't even a screw-up. It was outrageous. She got a ticket, but that's a whole other problem here. So that's the real world, Representative Nornes. Don't lay this on the parents or even a young kid. This is an important piece of legislation. It's so somebody doesn't waste $20,000 or $30,000 or $40,000 and gets a degree that they can't use and have to go back to school and do it all over again. And what I just told you is a true scenario. Representative, help me out. You're an attorney. Would the court can't tell me when my daughter, and Mauro, you used to be an attorney. I don't know if you grew up or felt guilty or whatever it was, but
all the above.
So I can't know, right? Representative Maslow, I can't know. She's of age. She's a majority, age of majority after 18. I don't get told that. I didn't know that. How am I supposed to tell her you can't go into counseling or whatever?
Representative Rukavina, are you asking a question?
I'm asking a question.
I just want to respond for just a moment. Now, I'm assuming that she would go into her counselor then at college and tell them that she had a DUI?
She probably would think, I was a kid. I was 10 days away from being 21. Is this going to affect me the rest of my life? How would she know that?
I'm making an assumption that your daughter would have told you, and then you would know about it. So, anyway, move on to another question.
Representative Nornes, Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I'm sorry we're not going to move away from this topic, though. Speaking as a counselor at a community college, I will tell you that, number one, there aren't enough counselors to meet with every student about every issue. And so I'll just lay that out there because every time I have the opportunity to talk about that, I'm happy to be able to do that. I certainly do want to talk about the issues here that students are paying a lot of money right now for school. They're going into great debt tuition is high for them to be able to make the payments, and they are working many jobs in order to pay those bills. And this is something I would agree certainly with Representative Rukavina, Representative Norton, talking about the fact that this is a serious issue. If a student is coming and they want to go into a field, and it doesn't matter if it's cosmetology or nursing or if it's criminal justice or what it might be, the record that they may have may impact their future ability to get a license, to be able to be accredited in a future with their future career. It may impact their financial aid. It may impact other things. So giving them, it's kind of, you know, giving them their consumer bill of rights kind of at the beginning to be able to say, this is what you should be aware of. And if you've run into this yourself, yes, there's some personal responsibility with that, and they should try to learn that from themselves. But I'll tell you that it's not easy for a student who's coming in. It doesn't matter if they're an 18-year-old or a 36-year-old. They may not really know what's expected of them with that. So I'm concerned about that, and I just wanted to have the opportunity to share that as it's been raised. But I wanted to also then, I'll switch gears a little bit and talk about the credit card issue. Certainly we have a number of people that find themselves in a situation where finances are they don't maybe pay attention to what they're doing or where their money is going, and getting a credit card is certainly a concern for some people. But I wanted to ask you specifically about that part. Is there a monetary benefit that you know? Is there a fiscal note on that piece maybe that the university or the colleges would anticipate being able to gain from the credit card piece?
Representative Nornes.
I do not have a fiscal note. I do not have a number. I'm not aware of what impact that might be. I recall a couple of years ago when this was, again, debated here, there may have been some figures thrown around, but I don't know what that would be. It would That'd be just making an assumption.
Okay. Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Nornes, I don't know if there's going to be a great deal of amount of money that would be coming into a university or college. But the other piece, besides the financial concern for having access, as you said, people get invited to purchase credit cards all the time. I'm not sure that they should have that invitation when they're going to college. To me, that I'm not sure about that. But the other piece is that, you know, I work at a small community college. I'm not sure that we would reap the benefit, even if there is a monetary benefit. I'm not sure that my small community college is going to reap benefit from our students getting a credit card, much like, you know, a state university would. So if you have a, you know, a student population of 10,000 students versus 2,000 students, you might have a greater opportunity to get money, which again adds to the disparity that we have about how we're getting funded, and so it's just kind of an ongoing thing. But I guess I just have some concerns about that piece as well because of the financial illiteracy sometimes that students have and the concern I might have about that.
Okay, Representative Rukavina.
Mr. Chair, if you could ask, I mean, we've got some young people in the audience here, and we've got, I think, some others that might be at least concerned with the repealer of 135A, 157. So could we ask if there's anybody?
Yes, Representative Rukavina, we have one person that has indicated prior to the committee meeting, Mr. Mark Haas is here. Okay, would you come up, please? And thank you for coming in and welcome to the committee. Could you introduce yourself for the record?
Yes, good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. Thank you for taking a little bit of time for me. My name is Mark Hazy, and I'm the Vice President of the Council on Crime and Justice, which is a nonprofit based in Minneapolis. It's been around about 50 years. It does programming for crime victims, offenders, and we do research and policy work. We're also a member of the Minnesota Second Chance Coalition, which is a coalition that's formed in the last few years of over 50 organizations throughout Minnesota that support policies that allow those who have any kind of a criminal record to safely and completely reenter their community. I'd like to just give you a little bit of the background on 135A, 157, and Representative Nornes, I'm going to respectfully oppose your proposed repeal of this statute. But before I just do a quick history on it, one thing I do want to make clear is the situations that sometimes require a student to know what their barriers are actually more severe than some of the ones that were just brought up. An example I would give is a 14 or 15-year-old, let's say they get in a fight, and they happen to pick up a baseball bat, or even worse, a knife. And you know, no, they don't attack somebody with it, but they have that. It's charged as a second-degree assault with a deadly weapon. Maybe the charges are reduced or dismissed, and they go through some juvenile program, and they go happily on their way, and they decide they want to go into nursing, and they do two and a half years of nursing school before they go to their clinicals, and when they the Department of Human Services does their background study, which is required for their clinicals, they get a piece of paper back that says, you are permanently disqualified from working in licensed facilities in the state of Minnesota. And that's the way it's the reality of the way that our law works right now. That's the underlying issue here, is that we have some laws that completely shut large groups of people out, and many people that you would not expect would be shut out from this kind of employment. This is for those of you that have been here before. You know that these issues have been debated many times. And the other thing I'll say is, from our perspective, we often get calls from young people and their parents that are facing these situations when it's late in the game. We also educate judges, lawyers, criminal defense, and prosecutors. We're starting to reach out more to schools to educate them about these issues. Many of them do not know about this. They're judges, public defenders, that do not know how some of these human services licensing laws can keep somebody from working in certain areas of employment. And I wish we didn't have to tell kids that, hey, you know, this thing you want to do, you might not be able to do it. But like was already said, I would rather have them have that information up front and be able to invest their money and time, or maybe in some cases do something that will help them, you know, do what they want to do before they get too far down that road. History-wise, you know, this wasn't something that we just dreamed up on our own. In 2007, the Minnesota Legislature convened the Collateral Sanctions Committee because of this growing concern about increased criminalization, along with increased use, access, and discrimination based on all types of criminal records. And one of the recommendations they made was to, well, actually, if I could just read quickly the paragraph that describes what they found on this. And this is a, you know, this is made up of legislators, people from law enforcement, people from the community, judges, attorneys. And what they said is that the committee has received troubling stories about people who invest time, energy, and money in education aimed at getting them licensed and or employed in particular jobs, complete their studies successfully, and then learn that they cannot be employed in the fields for which they are prepared. We learned about an 18-year-old woman who, with a delinquency adjudication for a serious assault at age 16, who was encouraged to complete a nursing assistant course at an alternative high school, earned a certificate in that field, and is unable to get DHS approval to work with vulnerable people, a result that the school did not anticipate because administrators believed the delinquency would disappear when she reached majority. We heard from a man who borrowed money to pay for an expensive course at a for-profit school and was shocked that prospective employers who initially offered him employment withdrew those offers when they learned of his 7-year-old misdemeanor record. We're told of a man who completed the 2-year college degree required of Minnesota peace officers and was participating in a skills training course before he was barred because of a domestic assault conviction that made it illegal for him to possess or use a firearm. While there may be schools that warn students to consider their criminal records, the public nonprofit institutions contacted informally had given little consideration to the impact of criminal justice contacts on employment. Their recommendations were to give notice to those intending to embark on studies leading to employment that they should consider any records of contacts with the police or criminal courts in career planning, and educate school administrators and counselors about collateral sanctions, which is what we were trying to do. So those are my comments. Thank you for your time. And again, I respectfully request you, Representative Nornes, to remove this part of your repeal.
Mr. Chair.
Are there any questions? Representative Rukavina.
Not of the witness, but Mr. Chair, and I don't know, Representative Nornes, how you're going to proceed with this for possible inclusion or whatever, but I would just suggest and hope that you reconsider this. You know, you want to, I'm just, like I said, there's probably hundreds of other mandates. If you want to yank my chain on Made in America, yank it. That's fine with me. I'm a big boy. But I think you really should reconsider this 135A-157 repealer, because you could affect people's lives forever, and you know, it's a mandate that I haven't heard many complaints about, but I've heard many praises from folks that were warned ahead of time not to go into the field that they were going into. So please reconsider that one, if nothing else. I'm not going to make any motions here today, but as you're putting your bill together, I will then make motions if this is still in there, and I'll scream and yell about the other stuff later on, and that's fine. But please reconsider your.
I would only add one thing, Mr. Chair, that I have had experience myself where constituents have called, and they've been in that exact situation that you have described. And I've worked with the Department of Health and Human Services. I've worked with the Department of Health. I've worked with others. And there, it's not an absolute in all cases. And we've actually found people who have been able to continue the job that they have, you know, but given a second chance, and that's what it amounts to, even though they've had a record. So it's not a black and white absolute. I've got one constituent, and I won't go into a lot of detail, but this was a Department of Health and Human Services. She worked at a nursing home. She now has high security clearance working for the federal government in Washington. So we gave her a second chance. She now has a tremendous job in a different field. Because again, she had a second chance. So,
Representative Morrow.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Nornes, when I'm not here, I'm down at Gustavus, and one of my jobs is to act as the pre-law advisor. And one of the requirements for practicing law, and I know I'm opening myself up to some kind of lawyer joke, is that you meet the character and fitness test. And one of the character and fitness tests, in fact, the first thing that the board of bar examiners mentions is unlawful conduct can be a reason for excluding someone from the practice of law. For this reason, Chair Nornes, the University of Minnesota, all law schools have questions on their application regarding past criminal conduct. Because as I've heard from the representatives at the University of Minnesota, in fact, every law school in our state and our region, they don't want to admit somebody who won't be able to practice law once they get their degree. So I'm going to join Representative Rukavina. I would strongly discourage you from changing this provision, from repealing it, because it provides up front, before someone starts their first day of law school, notice that they may not be able to practice law at the back end.
Representative Norton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just wanted to respond to Representative Nornes' comments. And I think it's great when we can, as legislators, we get these calls and we can help students. And it's only a few that we're able to help, and I think that's great. But this, what we're doing with your with this provision is not telling children they can't go into a major. It's just providing them the information so they have the choice to decide whether they want to take that chance or not. So because of that, Representative Nornes, would you be willing to take an oral amendment? I guess I'd like to offer an oral amendment to strike on line 1.20 the number 135A.157 from your bill.
I think I need a copy.
Representative Norris?
I don't have a copy of the bill here. Okay. Oh, give me that reference again.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My amendment would be on line 1.20 to strike the numbers 135A.157, which is the citation of law regarding criminal record.
You're asking me to make a motion, or you?
No, I've made the motion.
Okay. I guess at this point I would oppose that motion. I'm not convinced that the argument we've had here today that we're raises to the level where we need to keep the mandate.
Mr. Chair, I'm moving it. I would like a roll call as well.
Okay, roll call has been called. We'll take the roll call.
Good. You going to ask for discussion, Mr. Chairman?
Discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Atkins.
Thank you. And it's on that point. How does it square with the prospect of an education malpractice claim by doing what you're doing?
Restatement.
How do you square it with the prospect of an educational malpractice claim? What's been your thoughts with respect to that?
A malpractice. I don't have a thought on that. Can you enlighten me a little bit?
Well, you're familiar with there's a growing body of law relative to education malpractice where there's representations that are made or misrepresentations or failure to make representations where students are pursuing claims following several years of education and payments of tuition.
Does this fit in with Representative Rukavina's comments a while back where everything is illegal?
Representative Atkins.
You maybe missed that. So I'm sorry I interrupted you.
Well, I don't know what you're talking about, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Nornes.
That counsel help?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
I guess in the interest of kind of the not only time but the discussion, I think I would change and support the motion to take that out.
Okay. Thank you.
Is that okay?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
So now we can, I guess, vote if we.
Are there any other testimony from
Mr.
any
Chair?
Other questions?
I have another question.
Representative Rukavina.
Chair, then, and thank you, Representative Nornes, for doing that. That really helps. I didn't understand that. Was the initial motion that this be held over for possible inclusion?
Yes.
Okay. And then I'll rant and rave.
Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Mr. Chairman. First, by the way, I love your shirt. I don't know if it was made in America or not, but that is really cool.
I thought it's my hunting shirt today. I'm fair game, I guess. So.
Well, and sometimes it's good to have sort of a shiny object that, you know, distracts people from what you're really talking about. But I missed the original motion, so I appreciate it being repeated. Both of those sections on lines 1.14 and 1.15, and then the reference, which is still in the bill as I understand it, to 135A.26. If you do include it in your, if it's going to be an omnibus bill or something, then it would need to go to the Commerce and Regulatory Reform Committee, because both of those provisions fall squarely within the jurisdiction of the Commerce and Regulatory Reform Committee. Is that the expectation then, is that if it's rolled in, you would refer it to the Commerce Committee?
Representative Norris?
We'll have to make that decision at a later time if that's what's necessary. I don't know that simply repealing it would require that we'd have to go that route, but if we're adding it in, I could see the necessity, but I don't know if we're just removing it, why that would be necessary.
Representative Rugavina.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Atkins. I was going to save that for when we were putting the omnibus bill together, but I agree with you. Representative Nornes, probably it's under the jurisdiction of this committee for 135A.26, dealing with that. It deals with colleges and college bookstores. And that's not even a mandate, because I've seen what's happening out there. But the 181.986 is a all-encompassing Commerce Department law, and merely because it requires that the university, which requires uniforms, that falls in there. It's cities and townships and counties and the state and gay morons and troopers and everybody else that are covered under that. And I don't think, and I think Representative Atkins is right, that if this bill is in, or this section is in this bill, you're going to have to go take the route to a few more committees. Remember, in our omnibus bill, this was in the workforce development. This committee used to be both higher ed and workforce development. And Ms. Novak can help me, but 181.986 had nothing to do with higher education. It was in the workforce development, economic development omnibus bill. So I think you should consider that, too, as this bill moves forward. And, you can maybe have Representative Gunther.
So noted.
Representative Rukavina, question. Representative Rukavina, question on your bill: did you send it to Commerce when you put that item in your bill?
No, because I was policy and finance. The title of my committee was policy and finance, but I initially did send one of the things to Representative Atkins' committee, and I don't think it was the college one, but I think it was the required equipment apparel 181.986.
Mr. Chairman, we made if I might.
Representative Atkins?
We get confused a lot. We were separated at birth. We made a point of hearing the Made in America bills in the Commerce Committee. I don't recall if it was which of the two, but in light of the fact that Representative Rukavina's committee at the time was a policy committee as well, we felt comfortable at least hearing one of the Made in America bills in the Commerce Committee to make sure that if there was real reservations, and I believe it passed on a unanimous vote, so there clearly were not reservations. But if you'd like, I can go back and check and see what the vote count was and bring that back. But the point really is that it obviously needs to go to the Commerce Committee. Both of those provisions are right smack in the jurisdiction of the Commerce Committee. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Do we have a motion?
Representative Norris,
have to act on. We don't have to do that.
No. Representative Poppy.
No.
Okay.
Was that Mr. Chairman? Just a point. Was the Representative Norton's motion, was that incorporated by the author then, or are we still planning to vote on that?
I can incorporate it. That speeds things up a little bit.
Sure. Okay. Any other discussion? Well, then House File 849 will be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Mr. Chair,
for the record, Representative Rukavina.
For the record, could you say House File 849 as amended?
Yes.
As amended.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
And we are adjourned.